This is Pandemic Buzz, a place where resilience practitioners gather to listen to insights from crisis management, business continuity, and crisis communications professionals. I'm your host, Devin Sermenis, a managing director at Widow Bryant's, a firm solely dedicated to supporting clients to prepare, respond, and recover from devastating events. Throughout this series, you'll hear from subject matter experts from a variety of industries and geographies. The intent is to share insights and best practices that you can adopt during these unusual times, or at the very minimum, some human elements that will further connect us as we adapt to new routines both at work and at home. Marty and Guy, thank you very much for being guests today on Pandemic Buzz.
It is so good to be with you today, Devin.
Hey, thanks very much, Devin. Appreciate it.
If you could you tell our listeners a little bit about yourselves in terms of full names, roles, responsibilities at Honeywell? And Marty, let's start with you.
Okay, I'm Marty Skull Jordan, and I am Senior Manager of Global Community Relations. I lead all of our global philanthropic, charitable, and humanitarian work around the world.
My name is Guy Grispit. I'm the Vice President of Global Business Resilience. At Honeywell, that includes business continuity, crisis management, and disaster recovery governance.
In the Honeywell sessions to date, with Guy and Chris and Mike and now Marty, we've talked a lot about resilience as part of the corporation, both as disciplines as well as functionally. In this episode, we're going to explore how Honeywell extends resilience past the corporation and starts bringing it into the communities in which they operate and reside. So our first question for our listeners, how does the executive level crisis management team coordinate with the humanitarian relief program? And I'm talking about covering the strategic what to do down to the tactical and operational how to do it.
Well, we work together hand in hand on everything from humanitarian crisis to our worldwide sites. If we would have a tsunami, a typhoon, a hurricane, an earthquake, we're watching those leading up to it. We're preparing the sites, we're preparing our people, and we are putting our humanitarian relief fund in action. And a little bit unlike other corporations, we have our own 501c3, the Honeywell Humanitarian Relief Foundation. Employees have an opportunity, if they want to contribute to it. And to date, we have helped over 2,400 employees with homes that have been damaged or destroyed. If they're displaced, we help them within 24 hours. We've contributed $14.5 million to help our global communities.
Yeah, no, just add on to that. I think, Devin, that Marty is, you know, an integral part of the crisis management structure that we built out at Honeywell and her function. You know, so both from that initial situational awareness, understanding of, you know, what's happening and is it impacting our employees and our operations, to also more that strategic response piece of the crisis management structure. And to that end, you know, we've recently done some enterprise crisis management exercises, and Marty was integral in being involved in that and responding to those scenarios that we put on. So, you know, it's a key part of how we see our crisis management response.
You know, it's interesting because we need to look at our sites and our operations and keeping them going, but about getting people there and getting them home and what's happening at home with their families. So it's really looking at it holistically.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's the difference that we've had here is, you know, when you look at Texas ice storms, we were very much looking at the business and how we could get the business operating and our customers. But then Marty's engagement really started with how does that impact our families? How does that impact employees? And how do we get ahead of that and, you know, really make sure that we look after them as well and the communities in which we operate?
And all of that talks specifically to how busy you are with the Honeywell Humanitarian Relief Program, probably in any given year. So undoubtedly, you've been exponentially busy throughout 2020 and 2021. Because your program has such local and global facets, let's start locally. So in the 2 weeks leading up to COVID hitting hard here in the U.S., Honeywell's Leadership Challenge Academy was already underway. Can you tell us a little bit about the impacts COVID had on this educational endeavor and the solutions you applied to the challenges?
You know, absolutely. And we have three pillars in which we focus and give in for Honeywell. Number one, STEM education. Number two, inclusion and diversity. And then our humanitarian relief. STEM education is front and foremost. It really mirrors what our company is. And for the last 10 years, we've had a legacy program, the Honeywell Leadership Challenge Academy, where we bring 300 students, 45 countries and 29 states to the U.S. Space and Rocket Center. That was at the end of February, beginning of March in 2020. COVID had been popping up around the world, but not really a lot here in the United States. We had the students there. Everybody made it there, made it home safe. But of course, we were monitoring things in every country around the world. So immediately when we got those students home, of course, a big sigh of relief. But just to tell you a little bit about that program, we've had it for 10 years. We've had 3,000 students go through it, and over 80% of them have now gone into STEM careers. So it's something that we're very proud of as a company. But it's something that we had to really watch and monitor. Where were these kids coming from? Were they healthy? Were they going home? Were they going to be able to make it back into their countries? And they did. Everybody made it home safe. But then all of a sudden, 2 weeks later, COVID shut down the world, and we were reaching out to every one of our STEM partners, every one of our inclusion and diversity and humanitarian partners, and saying, number one, how can we help you? We want to help our people, our employees, but we want to help our partners. What can we do to help you take your curriculum and put it online? Because we know there's going to be a lot of remote learning. And then we reached out to help our communities. And so that became the giving of face masks and N95s and literally millions of masks and opening COVID care centers in India. So it was helping our own, helping our community, helping our partners.
And that's a good segue, I think. You know, true resilience relies on coordination. You spoke a lot of it there, but it also encompasses care of community, care of people. So what existing structures within Honeywell did you leverage, and how did you coordinate with other departments to support the communities impacted by this year's Texas ice storm? You mentioned it a little bit earlier, but I'd like to hear a little bit more about that.
You know, I want to bring Guy into this part of it because we all work hand in hand on this. And the ice storm hit, and it hit hard. We had a lot of employees in Houston and in Dallas and Louisiana, and that area was absolutely frozen. People couldn't come and go. Their pipes were bursting in their homes. They were having to be displaced from their homes. So there was a lot of activity we were doing on the back end. So we were meeting with Guy's emergency management team. We were watching the weather. We were talking to site leaders and saying, okay, who do you have on site? Water was the biggest thing that we needed to get in. And we knew we couldn't get it from Texas. So we reached out to partners. Operation USA is one of our longtime partners in California. I reached out to them and they said, we got a truck of water. It's on the way. So we had it on the way. But then we also reached out to our procurement teams. And somebody called me, somebody I'd never heard from in the company. And they said, we hear you're searching for water and food for our employees in Houston. I said, absolutely. So they started looking in areas around. So all of our procurement teams got involved, our emergency management teams got involved, Guy's resilience team, my humanitarian and philanthropic team. So we had a lot of people looking at what can we do? How can we get things there fast?
Yeah, and I'd build on that, Devin. I think, you know, I haven't been at Honeywell long, but the engagement we got across the business, both on the response to from a business and operational perspective and making sure that we could keep our customers involved and inform our stakeholders. But also, as Marty was talking to, bringing all those people together to look after the community and our people. And that extended right up to the CEO and the presidents of the business. You know, I made a number of calls directly to presidents of businesses who made resources available to us to make sure we could meet the needs of our employees. And that stretched all the way through the weekend to make sure that we got that back and forth with the senior leadership. So they understood what we were doing and they were very, very involved in that and very supportive of it. So it isn't sort of just a microcosm. It's a whole organization coming together. And I think it's just how Honeywell is and the sort of DNA of what Honeywell is.
Everybody wraps their arms around each other when there is a crisis. And I remember in this one that some of the teams and site leaders in Louisiana, where we have some of our PMT and SPS facilities, reached out and said, you know what, we have some generators from hurricane season. So they put them literally in the back of a truck and drove them over there to help people who might not have power in their homes. Site leaders at some of our warehouses were helping to collect water and distribute food and diapers and other things that we brought in, formula for babies. And so we really set up almost mini grocery stores and stations where people could come and get supplies because they couldn't get grocery stores, the shelves were empty.
Yeah, and then what we also did, I think, you know, which was really good to see, was at the end of that, you know, when we understood that we didn't need any more of certain supplies for our employees, we made sure those supplies went to other needy causes within the area as well. And probably Marty, you can speak more to that, to the relationships we have there.
Right. So we knew that there was a big truck of water that was coming from California and on its way, instead of bringing it to Honeywell, we said we've got enough water. So we had a really good relationship with the local food bank in Houston. We had given them masks a few months ago. And so I picked up the phone and made a call, and they said, absolutely, we need water. And so we just rerouted it, and it went there and helped people in need. So that's, you know, my team is, I always say, far and wide, and we have a lot of champions in a lot of places, and we network and utilize those people. And sometimes we remember organizations and partners we may have given to months or years before, and we reached out.
Yeah. So I think, you know, that I think it spells, you know, when we talk about resilience, Devin, in previous podcasts we've done, we've looked at all the very much the traditional view of how we look at resilience and making sure the business operates, you know, and we meet our customer requirements and our customer needs. And that is critical, and it's still the main part of how we do it at Honeywell. But I think, you know, the leadership and Honeywell as an organization takes a very broad view of resilience and wants to make sure that, you know, our people are taken care of and the communities in which we operate in, which is extremely important to us.
And you look at it, I think when you're thinking about resilience and preparations, you need to prepare before, during, and then look at it after the storm. And we did that. We all got together afterwards and said, what did we do that worked really well? What could we do next time that would make it better? We had 72 people who were immediately displaced from their homes because of frozen pipes, and they could not live in their homes, and they had to take their families out. So we got them funding from the relief fund very quickly, sent those checks to the site leaders and our HR folks who we work with very closely, who check on their people, got those checks to the people, and then, you know, continue to monitor what they needed afterwards with insurance and FEMA and what was being taken care of. But we work with human resources. We work with the site leaders. There's a lot of people on the ground that we reach out to who also check on our people. And we had a tornado recently in Czech Republic, and it was a place where they'd never had a tornado before. And we had to check on our people, and we have an amazing system to check on our people.
Yeah, that's our use of our mass notification system, which we're really, you know, developing and using more widely in these events. And as Marty said, you know, we want to make sure that where there's potential impact to our people, we want to make sure and have that conversation with them to check in with them. So in this instance, in the Czech Republic, we did, and thankfully they weren't impacted. But it's something we're driving and we're promoting throughout the organization as something that, you know, our employees should be engaged with.
Yeah, and I think those details talk a lot about the blending of coordination and commitment. So in the research I did, I want to unpack a little bit about the resources Honeywell provided over the pandemic. I think it's fair to say that you guys got into the surgical mask business, and I'd like you to unpack it a little further than distribution. Can you talk a little bit about the extent you went into to address the need for protective face coverings during the height of the pandemic?
Absolutely. Immediately, our leadership thought about what can we do. So we, within days, open up mask factories in Rhode Island and in Phoenix. We had them in Scotland, in UAE, in Tunisia, in India, in Mexico, and we were producing N95s and then eventually surgical masks. And literally in the millions, I believe at one point they said there was like a billion that could be produced annually. And my team was told, and you will have some of those to donate. So find the people that need them. So we reached out to our nonprofits, and then we went to the cities where we have facilities, and we reached out to local food banks, and we reached out to school systems for teachers who were going to need them when they got back into the classroom. And we also gave them to homeless shelters, because that was an area where we saw a huge need, where the virus was being contracted very quickly, and there weren't a lot of masks. They couldn't afford masks. And so we got them to the people who needed them the most, and worked very closely with our safety product solution. And we developed a mask team, and we brought together people who were at the warehouses and how many we had and where we needed to get them to and the shipping. And it was an area of Honeywell that really came together quickly, and they got the masks to the hospitals. We sent some to the Navajo Nation. We heard that they were having a very difficult time getting some. And then around the world, when masks were needed, we sent them. But we also had to, you know, big suppliers to hospitals and other areas as well.
There are always different levels of participation and corporate activism in community relations. And to some extent, volunteerism is about being able to put boots on the ground in any given community. How did you do that? How did you structure its volunteerism during the pandemic when social distancing and other parameters were surrounding the community relations?
You know, we got very creative and we were told to come up because volunteerism is a huge part of Honeywell. And we love going and rebuilding schools and community centers and doing those things where it's hands on. But we couldn't do that. So we had to come up with something that was completely contactless and virtual. So one of our partners is the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture. And I talked to one of their leaders, and they have the Freedmen's Bureau Project, which is a lot of documents that were handwritten that needed to be digitized and translated and for an exhibit coming up. So we had over 1,000 people at Honeywell that were doing virtual volunteerism. So we came up with that. People were reading to children online. They were mentoring to classrooms. Some of our researchers were doing that. And then we came up with something else that we knew that STEM kits were needed and hands-on learning was not happening because kids were sitting in front of a computer. So we worked with DigiBridge and we kind of looked at what was happening at grocery stores where people were driving in, popping their trunk, groceries were going in, and they could take them home. And so we developed with DigiBridge designed STEM kits that would have a book, have instructions, and have all of these wonderful things that kids could hands-on learn activities from. And so we came up with 500 of them. We had all the pieces. So people drove in to this huge warehouse where DigiBridge was, and we had several of us in the parking lot, and they would pop their trunk, and we would put in what where they could make 10 kits. And a week later, they would come back, pop their trunk, we'd take those 10 kits out, and then we got them to Boys and Girls Clubs and other school systems. And so as I say, we got creative during the pandemic. That was contactless, but it was impactful for kids.
Yeah, and creativity and innovation are themes that run throughout Honeywell's approach to conducting business. Can you tell us about Honeywell's community involvement and leadership as you got into mass vaccination clinics? Now we're getting closer to the vaccination and the race against mutation.
Absolutely. So another opportunity came up for Honeywell, and it was something that was just unheard of and unseen, but was so impactful for the community. So Tepper Sports, that owns the Panthers and Charlotte Motor Speedway, had the place. Atrium Health had the doctors, the nurses, and the vaccines. And then we came in with the logistics. And Torsten and Mike Pollock and our team just did an amazing job. It was the smoothest running mass event I've ever seen. We brought in, I helped with volunteers. We had like 175 volunteers that would come in, and it was so smooth, literally getting thousands of people, I believe 10,000 people through some weekends to help with mass vaccinations. And the interesting thing about it is they also wrote a playbook. So I know that that's happened in many other places around the country.
Yeah, and I think that goes to who Honeywell are and how they operate again, Devon. I think, you know, we not only put that on, but we didn't keep the IP ourselves. We made that more widely available to the communities. And, you know, we wrote a playbook of how to put these mass vaccination events on and then sent that out to all 50 states. So they, you know, helped them put their mass vaccination events on. And also, you know, I think we fielded a number of calls from our in certain departments about how we did it and how we could help other states do the same. Because, you know, our chairman and our CEOs and our presidents were passionate about making sure that vaccines were widely available to everyone in the community around the U.S.
You know, and I think that that's something that is really key here. And it starts with our CEO, Darius Adamczyk, and his lead team. With the mass vaccination clinics, that happened so quickly. And it was an idea that he had with two other CEOs, and it just happened, and it was so impactful, and so many people were vaccinated because of it. And then Darius also had the idea for our Small Business Innovation Fund. We typically have our regular grants for STEM education, things like that, but during COVID, we could see that all of the small businesses were really struggling within kind of a 2-mile radius of Uptown Charlotte, where we're going to have our brand new global headquarters. So Darius said, let's come up with a program. So we reached out to Center City Partners, Foundation for the Carolinas, and then brought in a couple other key partners. But we put down the $2 million in seed money. And to date, 99% of those small businesses that we gave grants to are still up and running and in business. And a lot of them are maybe second, third generation businesses, little moms and pops. And what we told them is this was not going to be for brick and mortar. It was not going to be for salaries. But what it was for them to innovate and adapt during and after COVID. So it was payless key entry, or it was maybe redesigning how social distancing would be in their building. Or some of them went to an online platform, and all are doing very, very well. They just needed some help with innovating and adapting. And I think it's really made a difference.
Yeah, and I just add on just quickly, Devin, I think, you know, all our leadership team from Darius and his senior leadership team are not just about sort of sitting in the office coming up with the ideas. With the mass vaccination clinic, they were there volunteering on those days. You know, Greg Lewis, Torsten, Darius, and Madden, they were all on the ground making, you know, doing the volunteerism as well. So I think that speaks to, you know, the engagement is from the top to the bottom of the organization.
So Marty and Guy, I think we've talked about how you've implemented resilience in the community at the local level, a little bit about the open sharing of intellectual property and approaches to enhance community efforts to get through the pandemic, and have touched upon some global aspects. Can you tell our listeners about the work that was done in India involving hotels and hospital beds? I read a little bit about this and thought that it was a fascinating approach and use of resources abroad.
Yes, when the COVID crisis, and we had this huge second wave happen in India, and it was really a humanitarian crisis because it just went across India and so many people were impacted by it. We immediately contributed over $3 million, and it was in part initially with meals and hygiene kits. And then we went in and opened up COVID care centers, and these have beds in them. They have beds and ventilators and defibrillators and monitors and x-ray machines and all kinds of equipment that was necessary to treat COVID. We've opened 5 to date. 2 more are currently going online, including a big pediatric facility. So these are in cities where we have facilities and there are cities that needed it. We've also done a donation of over 1,100 oxygen concentrators and 10,000 N95 respirators. And that's just in the first phase. We're going into a second phase now because the crisis is still there.
You know, again, with the engagement on that, we've had senior leadership, Greg Lewis drove that very much within the organization and partnered with that. And then also we've had our doctors and our HSE teams really engaged to give us the right data and give us the right information of what we need to get to those areas. And that continues today. And I think evidenced by the massive drive we've done in India to get our population vaccinated. I think we're in the, you know, over 5,000 people, I think, plus now have been vaccinated, and we continue to make that available for all our employees and their families in India.
So relief programs and community relations, as evidenced by the storytelling today and all the impactful efforts you guys made, take a tremendous amount of investment of both time and thought, consideration, passion's got to be involved, in addition to financing and funding. I think today's discussion really illuminated the effort that it takes to extend resilience within a corporation like Honeywell itself, and then really go outside of the corporation into the community. I know we have one more session after this teed up for Pandemic Buzz and the Honeywell sessions. Guy, can you tell us a little bit about who will be joining us next?
Yeah, no, thanks, Devin. I think, you know, I'd like to bring Rob Malow, our VP and financial controller, into the next session because he's a key person as we develop the resilience program, as we've talked about broadly, you know, across these number of podcasts. And I think it'll be great to have him talk to how we're bringing all these themes together. And, you know, we're at the start of the evolution. We continue to iterate. We continue to learn. You know, Marty talked about after the ice storm, how we have to go back and understand what we did well, what we could do better, and how we could improve. So I think, you know, bringing Rob in will help tie those themes together as we finish this podcast series.
Fantastic. Marty and Guy, thanks for sharing such great stories and being so insightful about the impact that you're having extending resilience past the corporation itself into the communities in which you reside and live. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Devin.
Hey, thanks very much, Devin. Really appreciate the opportunity and the time.
Thanks again for listening to Pandemic Buzz. Please like and share this podcast with your colleagues and be sure to catch our next episode.